Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Who, like the founder of the show, recognize if they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is part sinner, part saint, on Late Night Poets Blog Talk Radio, and we are part of allpoetry.com. You don't have to be on the website or in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are. You can read along with the poems and comment in the chat. So check out Late Night Poets on allpoetry.com. You can also buy our anthologies on Amazon. Check out Late Night Poets. Babbler, unfortunately, had to work tonight, her other job, her paying job, so she won't be with us today, but I do have Pam Ray with me. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Athesiana. How's it going?
All right. You know, I'm a little sore from shoveling because it's been a ton of snow, but otherwise okay. How are you doing?
I'm good. It is very cold here, and we do have snow, but I am fortunate that our driveway gets plowed I mean, it has to be paid for the service, but sometimes, you know, it's worth paying, you know. So.
If I did not have my husband who does most of it, to be honest, I probably would do the same. But I'm a little bit spoiled because I only do it like once every four times that he does it. But
well, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
And, you know, if only we were all like, you know, like millionaires who just loved poetry and, you know, didn't have to have those pesky paying jobs.
I know, right? I just put my second book of poetry on Amazon, and my mom's like, oh, wow, you're going to get, like, stuff. And I'm like, no, last time I made about, like, $10. So
but still, you know, that is really awesome. That is really awesome. And the third one, congratulations, very cool. I keep thinking about doing that myself eventually. It's not like I don't have enough poems. I have like a couple thousand on the.
You definitely do. You should go for it, Pam. You have amazing stuff. You could make multiple anthologies of your work. You have so many different facets to your writing. You could definitely get some books out there.
Thank you.
So it looks like we have another caller. Confess, is that you with us?
That is me. I was just going to say, you guys, I escaped the snow, thank God. I was in Chicago for Christmas, this past Christmas, and just got back to Texas on Tuesday. And when I came back to Texas Tuesday, it was like 60 degrees, and I was like throwing it in my husband's face, like, ha, 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 I'm in 60-degree weather. And then, like, today, now it's like 30 degrees. I was like, in Texas? This doesn't happen. This is happening. And you know, last year we got snow, but we didn't get like the kind of snow you guys are getting, but we did. We get snow, and it's kind of like Atlanta. They want to shut down the whole town because they got like a little centimeter of snow. So that was hilarious. but what wasn't hilarious is that, yeah, I lost power and water and everything last February. So I'm just hoping that don't happen this year. I'm hoping they step their game up here in Texas to never let that happen again. I even wrote a poem about it, too. I was so mad. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if you're not used to it, the infrastructure isn't there. I mean, even here, everyone's complaining so much about the snowplows on the streets. But the thing is, like, really, where I am, it's only, like, a ton of snow in January and February. So to buy mm-hmm. a ton of plows for a small town when there's 2 months that they're going to need it, I think we mm-hmm. have about five, like, big snow plows, and they take a while to get to all the streets. So, mm-hmm. I don't know, everyone always freaks out about it. They're like, yeah, it's not here yet at 7 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, calm down. It's coming. But,
yeah.
Anyway. Tonight we are going to be getting into two contests. One of them was last week's contest, but there are some carryovers. So that was The Art of Alfred Basha, and it had images of animals with human skeletons. So the one that we didn't get to last week was the one that looks like a wolf, but there's a person inside, not as in he ate the person, but as in he is the person. It's sort of like how sometimes you have like that animal instinct, but this is a mix between the human and the animal in that what you see is the animal, but deep inside they're a person. So people interpreted it very different ways, and it's fun to look at how different people got something different out of the art. So Alfred Basha's art is what inspired us, and we're going to start with a poem by Gerald E. Green. Here he is. The President's New Addiction by Gerald E. Green. He drank again while eating lunch, the recent turning point of every day, for afternoons had now become a battlefield where anger fought for dominance. It took a while, an hour or two, but all he knew gave him space, waiting for the first attack while hovering in dread. the verbal cannon aimed at me one day, releasing volleys undeserved. I stood my ground, did not retreat, but answered with a short retort. Don't interrupt, he spat with venom. I will not be dissuaded. Quickly came across my bow as I dared to smile in disbelief. Employees listed waited for the evil wolf to bite, knowing of a death within, a skeleton that ruined every afternoon. His business thrived as fear drove men to labor harder for the snarling wolf. His wife behind me laughed, a mockery in my defense. His ground was shaky, but the zombied creature blustered on. Since that day, I never called on afternoons, but only mornings when the wolf was in its den. End poem. Pam, would you like to start the comments?
Absolutely. I thought this was an excellent write. And you're right about with those images, how it was really interesting to see how people took them in a different way, you know. And I like how he took the image and wrote on it as a metaphor for someone who daily lives their life as an angry person, who gets their employees to listen to them, to react, because not out of respect, but, you know, out of fear. And there's this idea that the business drives, his business drive is fear drove men to labor harder for the snarling wolf. But you can see in the line after that where his wife behind me laughed a mockery in my defense. The whole idea that, you know, behind his back, nobody truly respects him, you know, not even his own wife. And it just goes to show that when it comes to, you know, thinking that you can control people and get respect by using anger, that in the end it's all a falsehood. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. I really like the way he worded some things here. The verbal cannon aimed at me one day, releasing volleys undeserved. Like, not only is he firing at people, but not provoked. He's just going off. But the first line, I think, is really important, too. He drank again while eating lunch. And throughout the thing, it talks about how it's the afternoons where this man is kind of dangerous to be around, that he spits this venom. So he's drunk, and it releases that wolf within him. So maybe the wolf is always there, but in the afternoon when he's had his alcohol, then he is primarily a wolf with a man inside, instead of in the morning when he's the man with the wolf inside. It creates that reversal. And I like the part that you pointed out, Pam, where even his wife is looking down on him when he behaves this way. And then people have to adjust. They don't call him in the afternoon anymore. They look for when the wolf will be in its den. I thought this was a clever metaphorical piece. Confess, what did you think?
No, I found it very, I found it kind of mean that his wife laughed at him. Like, anyway, but that's not actually what I was going to say. It was just a lingering thought after you guys mentioned the wife. But, yeah, I thought this was very good storytelling, very good imagery here. The words here, I love the different words, but most importantly, towards the end, the last stanza when he's, you know, when he's in his den, it's like he had to go back into like a inner solace to, you know, not let that wolf come out again. And like you pointed out, he was drinking, and it had me remind me of a day or a poem I wrote about my drinking. So I used to drink horribly bad, but now I'm like a more simmer about it now, where my drinking used to turn into a very bad thing where I'm going off on everybody and for no reason. No one did anything, and that was one of the stanzas that allowed me to go back to that time where he says undeserved. It was undeserved. Like, why are you even, you know, being rude to me? So I found it even more interesting that it was some awareness here of that of his inner person, or how he can react if he starts drinking. So maybe it was one of those accountability type of poems as well. So I like that. I like this. This is good.
That was a great share. Thank you. Confess, will you read the one by Steve Caden, please?
Sure can. I got it. Let me go back. Yeah. Got it. Oh, no. I hate when it does this. It's like it goes back and then it'll show me a really late, early on comment. It's like, I saw this already. Okay. Oh, believe. Okay. First of all, it's the same one because it's the same picture. Okay. Act as if, and it will be. People believe what they see, for underneath there lies the sheep. End poem.
Good read. Thanks. That's a short one. You know, the poet here, Steve Caden, actually wrote to all of the prompts in that contest. So we read two of his last week, and then this is the shortest one. And I'm really happy that he felt so inspired by the art that he wrote to everything. I like that people believe what they see, for underneath there lies a sheep. I think that people do believe either what they see or what they want to see, or sometimes what they're afraid to see. I like the way that he makes you think about that, and that his lines get longer each time. Act as if, and it will be. People believe what they see, for underneath their lives a sheep. It's like it grows as it goes. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, definitely a strong brevity, especially for as few words. And I have to agree, it is interesting the way he chose to have his line get progressively longer. And I like every line because you can't really separate them. But what I particularly like about this is that it's about the perspective that people create in their own mind rather than, you know, getting the information from this direct source. So very well done.
That's a good point. It is about how your own mind takes things. It might be what you see, but people see things differently from different angles, from, you know, filtered by their own situation, their bias, the fact that they're blind as a bat like me. Like, you know, there are many things that can influence how you see things. Confess, what did you think?
Similar to both of you guys' comments, but I also want to throw in my little extra narrative where I would say that I was bitching about this earlier. Oh, can I curse? Can I say that? I was screaming about this earlier and talking to my husband about how I was talking about COVID and kind of how it's politicized right now. And I'm like, how do they have this name, Flurona? How? Where did it come from? Y'all just, Flurona. No, y'all are all in, like, these labs figuring it out. How else can we make more money? And I was telling him, like, people need to wake up, like, literally need to wake up from whatever dream we have been under. I don't per se think I'm in a dream because I like to do, like, research and all of that. But a lot of people don't want to take that extra mile to really, you know, understand what is being told to them. At this point in life right now, you can't even trust journalists, and that is the most saddest thing I think I ever had to witness in my time on this earth, is that can't even, you know, read a newspaper without having to go to, like, four different sources or to the main source of where they even got the story. So, it, you know, things like that drive me crazy because I come from an era, I'm not like super old, but I come from an era where journalism was literally the oath of ecstasy. And, you know, you ethically wanted to report the truth. You wanted to go after the person. You didn't care if they threatened your life. You're like, I'm still going to get this story. Everybody needs to know, you know, like it was an urgency for the truth. And now people are so scared of it. It just pisses me off. But anyway, I thought it was great.
I like that it inspires passion. You know, it's amazing what a brevity can do that. It can, get things going in our brains. Pam, would you please read the poem by Scraps and Scribbles?
Absolutely. All right, this is Mr. Strange by Scraps and Scribbles, and it goes like this. The forks of cool night air and crystal blues have spun his best croon to not disturb. He's aching still from some unhealing bruise and hiding from the light, because light protrudes. A sleeping fur, a beaten, matted thing, they stabbed at him because he teeth and claws. They didn't care for mournful things he'd seen, mistook his lonesome howl for a roar. He limped away to lick his wounds and die. The moon looked on and wept when she saw this, his last confused and life-lamenting cry. She wove into a metamorphosis. They say that he's a man now, gray and shy, gray though young with strange and yellow eyes. End poem.
Great read, Pam. That is such intriguing description there. I really enjoy the way that the man is described as he changes from the wolf. And the idea of the moon weeping is it just that personification is really great. Where is it now? The idea of him being all matted is sad, but I can really picture it the way that they're talking about it. And they went after him because of his teeth and claws, and they didn't like his song, but he wasn't necessarily bad. They're just intimidated by him. So I think this is making you think about, sometimes people seem threatening based on the way that they might look or the way that they might sound. But actually, it's just this man who gets lost, and she has to change him so he's safe. I don't know. I think this is a beautiful poem that I'd like to look at some more. But it has that werewolf in reverse kind of feeling. She's turning the wolf into the man when so often in stories the man becomes the wolf. Confess, what did you think of this poem?
Yeah, but I thought similar to where you're going with this, but I also was, I don't know, maybe I'm way off, but I was thinking maybe it does say the word metamorphosis, but like growing into this thing that they didn't want to become, you know. And then I don't know, when I hear yellow eyes, I think of jaundice for some reason and being sick. And I don't know if they went from being sick to being healed or being healed to being sick. And it did say some unhealing bruise there, hiding from the light. So it just sounds like someone has been, this Mr. Strange, it was supposed to be strange, but it sounds like more so it's changing into its real self here. But I'm not sure. I don't know. But like you said, I definitely would have to really annotate this, you know, better in more time. But I thought this was beautiful and beautifully written.
You know, you could be right. It's true. There is kind of a sickness kind of feel for, you know, when someone has the yellowing eyes, and he, you know, the animal nature could be about that, how he's changing. Also, metamorphosis could be, again, metaphorical, where maybe his personality is changing. Maybe he's gotten rid of his teeth and claws. He's no longer the tough guy. Now he's more shy. And when it's talking about him being gray, I think that's talking about age. So, you know, I think you're on the right track there. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I really like what you both had to say. I thought this was a beautifully written poem that works well as either a mythological type story or on a metaphorical level. It kind of reminds me of the scene with the villagers chasing the beast in Beauty and the Beast from Disney. I like that this rite it's about, to me, the cruelty of humanity and about how we oftentimes have trouble accepting people who are different. And what I like is that there's this real kind of spiritual feel in the end lines about of the main stanza about the metamorphosis and the way that the moon decided to take pity on him. The moon decided to change him in order to save him. Ironically, what I find it very ironic and a very thought-provoking part of the tale that he became the very thing which hated him. You know, so I think that really added to the depth of the rite. And I like that the moon is seen as a caring mother-like figure. So very well done.
You know, I love that you pointed that out, Pam, that he's becoming the thing that hated him. Because, unfortunately, that's something that we've seen in the world in terms of, like, assimilation. You know, sometimes the conquerors who maybe the colonizers were the ones who were, you know, hateful or discriminatory against the people who were originally there, and then they kind of force those people to be more like them, and you become like the people who mistreated you in order to be safe. So it's actually a very deep and sad notion that I hadn't even thought about until you said that, but wow, that adds a whole other layer to things. So thank you for pointing that out. I also liked your mention of Beauty and the Beast because that scene of them going after him because of the way that he looks is also a good connection here. It kind of makes me think of this picture book. I know I'm always talking about picture books because my work, but there's this thing, The Bear and the Bee, by Sergio Ruzier, and the bear is going to go get some honey, and then he sees this bee sitting beside the honey, and he doesn't know that it's a bee, and he's like, oh, I wish I could have that honey, but what if there was a bee? And the bee's like, have you ever met a bee? And he's like, no, but I hear they have, like, really big teeth and big claws, and they're really scary, and they're awful, and they're so mean. And he, like, goes on this big description of the bee. And the bee's like, you know, you have big claws and big teeth, and you're kind of scary looking. And the bear just goes, oh, no, am I a bee? And then he starts panicking that he might be a bee. And the bee's like, no, I'm pretty sure you're a bear. And he's like, oh, okay, good. I didn't want to be a bee. And the bee's like, you know, I'm a bee. And he's like, oh, but you're not that scary. And the bee's like, yeah, you just want some honey? I think it's really about, like, preconceptions that you might have about certain, like, cultures or I don't know what, but how sometimes things are not as scary as it would seem. And the person's actually nice. I just love that picture book so much. And he says it much better than I do. I digress. So the final poem that's to that piece of art is by Adrian 41062, and it's called Mongrel. The animal instinct never recedes. I, the king of all crossbreeds, in my eyes you see the savage, smelling fear I'll always ravage. Take the animal, the human inside, Dr. Jekyll becomes Mr. Hyde. The human emotions drive me wild, on your flesh I'm a suckling child. Be careful of my aggressive teeth, I'm alpha, that's my belief. Until you show me you are brave, with great confidence become your slave. None of us have the human skill, their strength and power come at will. Us crossbreeds will always be second best, living in the world as the oppressed. End poem.
Mm.
Confess, what are your thoughts?
I definitely like the last word here. That's where you like, that's like your biggest, like, you know, secession. You leave a longing impression with that last word, and that's what they did for me. I'm like, perfect. And I love the way they're describing how, you know, you have these two different worlds, the two different people here. You have an animalistic person, and then you have that, like they said in Mr. High, where you have that human emotion, and then you turn around and, you know, become aggressive, and you want to, oh, I'm sorry. And in my eyes, you see the savage smelling fear always ravaged. Tame the animal, the human inside, Dr. Jekyll becomes Mr. High. The animal emotions drive me wild, on your flesh, I'm a suckling child. And it sounds like he was coming from the wolf's perspective here, but it also sounds like the wolf is saying, like, I can either, you know, have this aggression and be as savage as I can be, or I can, you know, be good and also have this inner strength, have this power and yet still be surrounded by others who probably don't know their power yet. So it's, I don't know, it was pretty good, though. Yeah, it got me thinking.
Great thoughts. Pam, what were your impressions?
Well, first of all, I think mongrel is a great one-word title given to the idea that mongrel dogs or you know, people who were seen as mongrels, the lower part of society throughout history, have often been rejected. There's a real kind of strength of self-awareness in here. I really like the reference to the animal, the human inside. Dr. Jekyll becomes Mr. Hyde. Human emotions drive me wild. On your flesh, I'm a suckling child. The use of suckling child, I thought, really added to the idea of the metamorphosis that happens. It's interesting to me, the lines, I am alpha, that's my belief, until you show me you are brave, with great confidence, become your slave. To me, it's interesting. It kind of gives a nod to the hierarchy of a wolf pack, in that, you know, the wolf has to prove themselves brave, worthy of that position of leadership. So really just a wonderful, thoughtful write and very well done.
Yeah, I think it's a really intelligent piece. For me, it kind of spoke to being trapped between two worlds. The mix that when it's talking about crossbreeds, it's like, it makes me think of like how a dog, like a domestic dog, is very well behaved, but it is, you know, basically submissive. It has become the slave, with great confidence, become your slave. So, you know, he could be confident that he's safe and loved, but also basically be a servant or, you know, not have any freedom. Or he could be the wild wolf and be aggressive, but be free and wild. And when you want to be something that's in between, if it was a half-wolf, half-dog, doesn't fit into either world. The humans might be too afraid to hang out with it. The wolves in the wild would think it's too tame. It's worried that it relates to humans. It wouldn't fit in. And I feel like this could work for people as well. You know, like if you're kind of like the bad boy, wild, like gang guy, then that's one thing. And then if you're like Mr. Businessman, all like well-behaved and, well, I mean, businessmen are not always well-behaved, but like, you know, like more proper or like seem to think that they are. And then if you're something in between, then it's difficult. And I've always considered myself to be something kind of in between because I'm from like kind of a ghetto-y neighborhood, but I'm also really well-educated. So it's like with my you know, academic friends, I'm I don't know the word for it. I'm going to say trashy, but that's more extreme than I need to be. I'm like the very clearly the lower class person. And then when I'm with my more street smart friends, I'm the nerd. So I don't really fit in either world. And so I relate to this poem because I feel like I'm that crossbreed. Not genetically, but personality-wise. But I could just be projecting. That's true, Robbie. Businessmen can be a different kind of bad. That is also
I like
my
your
experience.
Observations there, Faziana, and how you brought in the personal touch into your comment.
Thanks, Pam. We are now on to the secondary contest, the one that's actually meant for today, which is inspired by the book Aristotle and Dante Discover the Universe. And that's a book I read about 10 years ago, which I can't believe it's been that long, and I really loved it. It's a teen book. I actually read it because I was on the chair of a teen book award committee, and it's a beautiful love story, but it also is about bullying and trying to fit in and the, you know, difficulties of growing up and being from different kinds of worlds. The cool thing in this is it, just like I was just saying about, like, you know, being the academic or being the street smart, one of the boys in this story is the high achieving upper class kid. And then the other one, his brother's in jail. His dad is, I can't remember, there's something, kind of aggressive about his dad is a veteran with PTSD, so he has flashbacks and it's really difficult sometimes, and they have very different lives. One of them is rich, one of them is poor, one of them hates school, one of them loves school, but they fall in love, and they have to navigate how neither one of their societies accepts the fact that they're in love. So it's just a beautiful story. And even if you didn't read the books and you didn't have to do this, the quotes from it hopefully inspired some people. So the first quote that we're going to go to is, "Words were different when they lived inside of you." And the person who wrote to that quote is Daniel Deschino. Actually, Confess, will you read this one by Daniel?
I sure can. Give me 1 second, guys. Okay. The voice of the queen is lost in translation. Sunset hypnotic pause to my walk as inspiring brilliance of the universe on fire to capture something deep, quantum within. A panic moment to grab my phone, capture the beauty of a soon-to-be-lost moment, but it is gone. If there is no button on my phone for feel, there's no button on my phone for emotion, there's no button to capture the smell of the air as my senses flow. Yet still pictures I take and words I write, words, man-made representations from forgotten creators, creators of words, like chaotic apris, letting loose a billion bees a minute, to penetrate each mind, mind as a hive, hive for breeding, breeding so I analyze, I conjure, I write, I speak, only representing thoughts, like I still life of galloping horse. Still I write, and still you read, why? End poem.
Great read, and excellent, right, Daniel? I like, here, where is the part? Words, man-made representations from forgotten creatures, from forgotten creators, creators of words. It's true, words are man-made. We create things to try to express different concepts, and it's fascinating to me how different languages sometimes have such similar structures and words for things, and sometimes it's because languages evolved from each other, but there are some words that are only available in certain languages that are really hard to translate, and the idea that, you know, certain people come up with words, and languages constantly evolving makes you think about how things started. The people who first thought of certain words. I like that he always has such a fabulous vocabulary, like apiarists, chaotic apiarists, and the idea that they're letting loose a billion bees a minute, like that is a lot of bees, and they're penetrating each mind. So with words, we're getting into people's heads, and then that the mind becomes a hive, and more words are made in each of those minds. I conjure, I write, I speak. I really like when he does those two-word lines there. It felt like almost Shakespearean. It made me think of, I think it's Taming of the Shrew, when he's like, I pine, I something, I perish. I can't remember the middle word, but that pause there, it's like that soliloquy where he's contemplating how it affects him. I conjure, I write, I speak. Still I write and still you read. Why? I think this is a really self-aware piece, and it works for us as poets who... words and playing with words and writing and reading are such a big integral part of this community that we're in on allpoetry.com. So I think as poets we can really appreciate what Daniel's getting at. Pam, what did you think?
I really like, first of all, how you mentioned the soliloquy type feel of that one part and how this is a very self-aware poem, because it is. And I like how this poem in general is about the pull of the written word and the power that the poet, the author has to create imagery. And it's always interesting to me to read how certain words developed, and oftentimes, as you mentioned, from similar languages, like a lot of words came from Latin or Greek, and so there are similarities, and yet there are words, like you said, that cannot be translated. Or even like where I really like that second stanza where there's that struggle, you know, to find that perfect word, to capture that idea that's floating around inside of you and really struggling with it because it feels like there are no words perfect enough. Really just a strong write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. And confess, you read it for us. Would you also like to comment?
Oh, yeah. Daniel knows I love him. I've read this previously to today, but I think I just told him, you know, I love his metaphors, especially in this poem, but to reread it now, the meaning for me in the first stanza, as aspiring brilliance, a universe on fire to capture something deep, quantum within. You know, anytime you think of quantum, you think of, well, I think of it as something I can't even see. You know, I can't even see this part of the universe. So, and then sometimes why things get lost, you know, especially if you're like having conversations with someone and you just have a different perspective. We're all different people. We have different brains. We have, you know, we're going to look at things in different perspectives anyway, no matter what. Like I was talking to my brother-in-law earlier today about my sister and how, you know, we grew up in the same house, but we are nothing like each other. And, you know, some things that we talk about, you're like, I didn't experience that the same. And you're like, but how? You were right there. You were right there with me. And it's because the way how the universe created us to be different. And I feel like there's beauty in difference. And there's beauty in understanding that. And I feel like here, Daniel definitely has understood this when he says, words, man-made representations from forgotten creators, creators of words. You know, sometimes here when we see these things that maybe we forget that we are supposed to be different. You know, we are supposed to, I don't want it to be lost, but some things just don't have to be understood, like quantum physics. Some things just have to be what they are. And I thought it was very great. And of course, I'm going to still read this. Daniel, it's good. But that's all I have.
I agree. Daniel's awesome. I really enjoy his poems. And luckily, he writes to a lot of my contests. So it brings them to my attention. And I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's there. He's on the board.
Oh, is he? Hey, Daniel.
Hey, Daniel. he says, always feels good when my point comes across opposite of what the poem is about. It's true, the poem's about having a hard time getting the point across, and yet he did a good job of getting that across. So well done.
Oh, great.
Our next few poems are by, are about the next quote. And the quote is, the summer was not meant for boys like me. Boys like me belong to the rain. And here we go. This poem is by Stephen T. Wellman. It's called Gray. What a dismal day. Paint your palette gray. Dirty, cottony clouds crying, filling the trenches in my soul. I'm a watercolor in the rain. Words color me blue. Spilt on a blank canvas. Bleeding misty misunderstandings with eyes that know the darkness in my soul. Shadows on the hills. Sketch my past and give me chills. I pant a melancholic masterpiece. only Vincent would understand and poem. Oh, I think that's beautiful. I really like the way that he uses the colors that are generally associated with sadness, which is what Ari was getting at in the story when he said boys like me belong to the rain. He felt like happiness was not something that he got to have, that in the summer it seemed like everyone was having these pool parties and like this great time, and that's not his life. That was not the way he got to be. And so he saw himself as someone who fits with the rain. And I see the sadness in this poem developed through the color. That grayscale, when it's talking about the painter palette gray. And I like that the clouds are not just clouds. They're dirty, cottony clouds. They're those fluffy, dark ones, and that they're crying. And not only are they crying onto the soil, but it's the trenches that are filling up in his soul. I think trenches is the perfect word for right there. And there's some alliteration in misty misunderstandings that I like. I thought this was really well done. And when it says Vincent, I think he's referring to Vincent Van Gogh, which is a nice reference.
Yeah, I was like, are you talking about Vincent Van Gogh? He was like, actually, yes. I'm sorry, that's my niece crying. She doesn't want to go to bed.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to mute my phone.
Okay. And I think Pam has stepped away. Oh, no, Pam is back. Hi, Pam. Did you get to hear or read the poem by Stephen?
I got to read it. I have to say this is a little shorter than I usually see from him, but it's definitely just as impactful as all his other poetry. I really like how he uses the example of art. And I think by referencing Vincent Van Gogh at the end of the thing, only Vincent would understand. I feel like there's this connection to the idea of how quite a few of Van Gogh's paintings were done with while he was in an asylum, after having a nervous breakdown. And I don't think that's necessarily representative that necessarily Stephen Wellman was in an asylum or had a nervous breakdown. I don't know for sure. But I do think that there's this kind of tone within the right that speaks of the way we often become a cage for ourselves, how we oftentimes feel trapped or, out of place. I really like this all the way through, but I really like bleeding misty misunderstanding with eyes that know the darkness in my soul. Powerful lines there and really well done.
I agree. And I think that this really captured the mood of the book too, around the point where this quote was. So good for Stephen for capturing that feeling from the quote. I'm glad that you pointed out, Pam, that Vincent Van Gogh had mental health challenges, because I mean, he's the one who cut off his ear, right?
That would be him. Yes. Did Robbie want you to leave him on hold, or have you just?
Oh, I did not see him there. I apologize, Robbie.
Hello.
Hi, Robbie.
Hey there. How's it going?
All right. How are you?
I'm not too bad. So I had a chance to hear the last couple of poems.
Oh, great. I'm so sorry that I didn't see that you were there. I get caught up in the poetry. Babbler's not here tonight to be my backup, although Pam's been awesome.
That's okay.
Do you want to comment on Stephen's poem?
Well, one thing that caught me right away, actually, I don't know if he's aware of this. I saw this on, and it was something that I picked up at the end of the poem, and actually it comes to your comment there, Pam. I saw in a TED Ed video his painting Starry Nights, and it seemed when mathematicians have looked at it, it has a property of something called turbulent flow, and it seemed that it was all of his pieces from when he was in the asylum, or most of them, they're the ones that seem to have that technique. And he, in those moments where he had his breakdown, you know, where his mind was mad, basically, his understanding of a thing chaotic, like turbulent flow, had come out. It didn't come out when he was more, you know, on the level in that. And I found that to be a fascinating concept. I mean, you don't necessarily want to go into that to understand, you know, something like turbulent flow, but it really was poignant to me, that video, and it reminded me of how there's that blessing curse that artists have. And Van Gogh is the absolute example of that. You know, you have kind of that, you're in touch with almost like that aspect of the universe, you know, the kind of, it's like you get closer and closer to it, but if you get too close, it starts to, you know, loosen your mind, right? And it's always that teeter-totter of, you want to be closer to, you know, that in art, you know, the absolute expression of it, you know, you don't want to be so close to it that it starts to literally make you go crazy.
That's a good point.
I could have said that more succinctly, but...
No, that's perfect. I agree with you. I feel like definitely my best stuff is from when I'm in my, you know, craziest generally, if I'm in a dark place, that's when I can be more artistic. I'm not good at expressing the, like, happy very well. And I think that artists, visual artists and artists of all kinds, when they tap into that darkness, sometimes they find something new. There's something about the madness that gets you somewhere. Now, I'm not saying that Stephen is mad whatsoever, but I think that he has some good insight here. So thank you, Stephen. Now, Robbie, you were stuck on hold for a bit. So did you want to comment on Daniel's as well, the one before that?
I did have a couple of thoughts, but I've kind of lost track on that. Just, you know, when you're going from one poem to another, like the other poem takes your focus. So yeah, I had a couple of thoughts, but they've kind of been gotten lost.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Do you want to read the next one for us? It's called Missing the Storm.
Okay. I ache in my bed as the storm wanes and sunlight begins to snake itself in. Boys like me belong to the rain. Steam wafts upward from where rain had lain. Dancing and prancing and doing little spins, I ache in my bed as the storm wanes. I scoff and turn my back to my melancholy's bane, while birdsong and children's chortling makes a din. Boys like me belong to the rain. I long to feel thunder thrum in my veins while misery fans out like a flash of leaven. I ache in my bed as the storm wanes. Why let in sunbeams when depression can rain? I'll close my curtains so light cannot creep in. Boys like me belong to the rain. Though the cloud bursts moved on, water still stains my roof, my carpet, and my feelings within. I ache in my bed as a storm wanes. Boys like me belong to the rain.
Wow. very nice read. Thank you, Robbie. This is a great poem, Moonlit Rain. And what an appropriate username to write this, Moonlit Rain. That actually fits perfectly. I think this brings to life those feelings of being the storm. That works really well with that prompt of thinking that boys like him are the rain or belong to the rain. Having that idea of thunder being in the veins works really nicely because Ari, the character who said the quote, has a really bad temper, and he gets that like adrenaline pumping in his veins, and I feel like the thunder in the veins could be that anger. And then the misery fans out like a flash of Levin. I have to admit, I looked up Levin to make sure I understood what was going on, and it's lightning, which makes perfect sense there. So that's good. Thank you. I love getting new words. So Levin, lightning. Great. And then, why let in sunbeams when depression can rain? I'll close my curtains so light cannot creep in. And, you know, it's a thing where sometimes it can be overwhelming, both literally and figuratively, where when I am in a bad depressed state, I don't want the sunlight. I just want to be locked away. But also being around people who are super chipper and hearing like the laughter and all the happy things when you're feeling like a storm can be difficult because there's that jealousy. There's that contrast of like, how are they so happy when I feel like this, or why am I not like that? Which I think, again, is the quote because it's talking about other people get summer, I am the rain. And I feel like this connects so perfectly with the prompt. Very well done. Confess, are you back with us?
Oh, yeah, I've been here. I'm here.
Okay, cool. So what did you think of the poem?
Won't go gentle antagonite. So I just found out this is a villanelle. And it's, to me, very impressive for the actual prompt. And it was very creative from the prompt. And as you stated earlier, very very fitting for his pen name. But I especially like, I scoff and turn my back to my melancholy thing, while birth song and children's groaning, oh my God, I can't read today. Makes the din. Boys like me belong to the rain. It was like, at first it sounded like he was like, oh, you know what, maybe I won't just stay melancholy at first. And then it was like, nah, I think I like this. I like being sad right now. I want this sadness. I need to feel it so I can get past this. And I felt like that was very beautifully written. And then in the last stanza, through the clouds first moved on, water still stained. My roof, my carpet, and my feelings within. An ache in my bed as the storm wands. Boys like me belong to the rain. I love how, like, even in the villanelle and the festina, how everything comes together in that last stanza. And you really get to see the end thoughts of the poet from all the other stanzas. And that's why I really like villanelles. Something about them that you can't get from like regular type of poem, like poetry styles, free verse. It's like it's an impressive. It's very impressive when you're keeping up with the form and then also still telling a story as well. And it flows. I thought that was very impressive, Moon, and very good.
Great comment. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, well, first of all, I really liked what Confess had to say. It's beautifully written. I like how it's, you know, about that storm that rages inside, that misery that you just, it just feels like it's an inane part of you. I really like Why Lead in Sunbeams When Depression Can Rain. I'll Close My Curtains So Light Cannot Creep In. As you were mentioning, Faviana, it really, it's sometimes hard to deal with anything that contrasts with feeling dark and depressed. Steam wafts upward from where water had lain, dancing and prancing and doing little spins. I ache in my bed as the storm wanes. Those are very just powerful, emotive lines. And you just really feel how this person struggles to understand themselves. So wonderful write and very well done.
Thanks, Pam. Good comment. And Robbie, you read it for us, but what did you think?
I think this poem in particular does a good job of embracing, you know, going to that narrative of just completely embracing a feeling, and especially something like the rain is a good vehicle for that, because it's something like you can't really embrace a snowstorm. You kind of can, but you can't really go out there and be like, oh, snowstorm. And you can kind of do that with the rain, right? You can go out and when it's raining, to at least not too heavy, and I'm embracing the rain. It just made me think kind of tangentially of how I do photography, and they talk about how stormy days, that you can go out on those days specifically to do things you normally couldn't do with photography. So you could take that in your life experience, like literally, as opposed to not just emotionally. You can take pictures of things like crows and ravens, like I've done, and there's no sun to wash out the detail. You get like really detailed pictures. And then there's little critters that come out only when it rains. And so you can get pictures of those things. So I didn't know that. And so you could, if you wanted to, you could take that to a literal level and, you know, embrace that weather and go out and do some things you normally couldn't do. And I agree with that about the contrast for sure. Sometimes when, you know, like you're out at a coffee shop, and you're just in a miserable mood, and you have been for a while, and then you see like the couple across from you, and you're just like, your mind, you're like, you just don't want to see it. I found that part to be particularly impactful, because I'm a highly emotive type of person, so when I see something like that, I particularly get, I don't know what the word is, fussed over. to use a lighter word. Sometimes when I come across that contrast, and again, that's something that I think us artistic types, we get that amplified, you know, quite a bit, is that when we're happy, we're so happy, but when we're melancholy, we're really melancholy, and we embrace our moods even more so than the average person, whether they're good or bad. It can make us exhausting.
Yeah, and exhausted.
Exhausting to be around.
Feeling all those things is exhausting.
What's that?
I said feeling so strongly is exhausting, and then you're right, we can be exhausting to other people because we're drama sometimes. Guilty. Some of what you said about like going out in the rain and having a different experience made me think about in the book, the two main characters have kind of like a forbidden love. So they don't actually interact as much as they want to. And one of them tells the other one, you like rain. Whenever you go out in the rain, imagine that each raindrop is a kiss from me. And so he goes out into the rain and he's like, I got so many kisses today. It was just so cute. So going out into the rain became like their thing. Our next quote is, and I thought that maybe there were ghosts inside of me that I hadn't even met yet. They were there, lying in wait. Pam, I have your poem up if you're ready to read that.
Yes, absolutely. This is The Loiterer of Fury and it goes like this. A fury loiters inside of me, waiting for the shift of gears in the city bus I swallowed. In the possibility of dreams not coming true, there's too many corners in a burning building. A crown of stars tilts towards the beggar's list. And I'm another second away from discovering the secret to an epoxy resin self-loathing. Mockingbirds grab the timber of unsung branches. I'm stepping in shadows to steal the cry of the fawn. She's dappled sunlight and shade a tar of emotions, bleeding to a mother that drowns beneath the coiled snake, rising in the shrapnel of a rib cage. End poem.
Oh, wow. That had such intense images. I love this, Pam. I really liked In the City Bus I Swallowed, and There's Too Many Corners in a Burning Building. The epoxy resin self-loathing, like it's going to form and take on that and stay that way and be stuck in this self-loathing. Oh, you have such a variety of images here that it's almost like overwhelming. But the ending, rising in the shrapnel of a rib cage, is just absolutely gorgeous. I think this is amazing. I really like it. And the whole shrapnel of a rib cage, it works incredible metaphorically, but I'm pretty sure in the book, Ari's dad, who was in the war, actually does like have something about, he talks about the shrapnel in his rib cage, but then he also, or maybe might not have been his rib cage. He talks about his shrapnel, but then he talks about how the mental shrapnel is so much worse than the physical shrapnel that he has. So it also made me think of that. Wonderful poem.
Oh, that's cool. I did not know that. Just a nice coincidence, but very cool.
Yeah, it works out. Ravi, what did you think?
The image that came to my mind was the Ouroboros. No, Ouroboros, I think. The lemniscate, the snake that bites its own tail, swallows its own tail. You know, the SCV,
oh, yes.
That eternal sign. Yeah, that sideways eight. It made me think of that, and it on a very interesting way, because it made me think of the image, but the poem feels like that too, because it's like in each stanza, it's hard to say it in words. I can kind of, but it's like in each stanza, the situation that's happening feeds into itself. Like mockingbirds grab the timber of unsung branches. Like there's a tension going on in each stanza here, and each situation kind of creates and resolves itself, and you kind of feel like it could, like it would, in each stanza, each atmosphere, each thing that's represented could kind of just feed into itself and keep on going and going, like stepping into shadows. You know, when you step into a shadow, it's your own shadow, right? And you can just keep stepping into it. So it had a very interesting tension that way, and especially with the way it ends, rising in the shrapnel of a rib cage, and it just kind of made me think of all the very kind of existential and sort of metaphysical images. So I like the way that it ended off with something that continued on that theme of being kind of very essential.
I like those thoughts. Thank you.
You bet.
Yeah, that was a great comment. Thank you, Robbie. Daniel says on the board, amazing, right, Pam? I love your metaphors and the idea of everything getting stuck inside of you. Also, the way you talk about a city bus when you talk about, then you talk about animals. Amazing poem. And it is an amazing poem. Confess, would you like to comment?
You had me thinking that you wrote this on the bus. I don't know. or the loader is waiting on the bus, or you're making me remember when I used to ride the bus and I used to be so mad because just imagine, I always say, I'm from Chicago, and the way my apartment was, the bus was literally, I walk out the door, bam, bus stop. You know what I mean? Like, it was like 2 steps and the bus stop was right there. So just imagine my surprise when I think I got the timing of the buses now. You know, you think you know the schedule, but things happen. So I thought I was on time. I get to the bus stop. I look down. The bus already came. It's down the street already. So I got to wait another 10, 15 minutes for another bus. So this made me think of that. And also about patience, right? And if you have it or not. And how it makes you burn when you don't have it. It makes you, your blood boil. If you're not a patient person, you know, it's so much energy into that because, you know, you're just impatient, right? But here it's like you were stagnant, but even though you were stagnant here, you're still looking at the beauty of surrounding you. It's like you didn't have a choice but to look at that beauty. You had to look at the birds. You had to look at the timber, the branches, the shadows, the sunlight, you know. So I thought that was beautiful. And as Aphasia had mentioned before, the last stanza was even a very good imagery there. I honestly, and don't kill me, guys, do not kill me. Okay, but I come from a background where they didn't have us reading Dante's Inferno. I didn't read this until I was in college. And even in college, I don't even think I appreciated it as I do now as I'm older. And I'm I try to be, call myself a writer or a poet. And now I'm even more appreciative of, you know, his writing. But when I was younger, I was just like, oh, my God, what does this have to do with us, you know? And now, as a writer, it resonates even more. So it makes me appreciate this write even more as well. So thank you for this share, Pam.
Well, thank you. And I really like your observations. And I remember living in Austin, Texas, and even Superior, Wisconsin, which is a bigger city than I live in now, and you know, waiting for the buses and how you had to be, like you said, exactly on time. But great comment. Thank you.
Can I just say I'm super jealous that you get new bus in like 15 minutes. It used to be like that when I lived in Ottawa or London. Where I am now, it's an hour. Maybe it will come again in an hour. If you're in the right neighborhood. If not, it'll be like twice a day. And then there's a lot of places the buses don't go.
After the evenings, it's 30 minutes in the daytime, but it's like every 40 minutes at night. And if you miss it, you're like, oh, God. You know, at nighttime, because then a lot of times the places are about to shut down or it's dark and there's weird people around. And you're like, oh, God, I got to wait for the bus.
Oh, my God, yeah. That's the one thing I really appreciate about Chicago is that I feel like Chicago and, like, New York are, like, the examples of good public transportation. Like, it's like the system. They need to share the system of whatever to all big metro areas. Like, Houston, I'm in Houston now, and they have maybe one of the worst public transportation, and I just thank God every day that I have a vehicle now. But if I didn't, I would be like stuck pretty much in Texas. It's like they definitely need to up the public transportation here. It is just horrible. But yes, Chicago, I'd have to give them hats off. But even when it's like bad weather, you know, it feels some kind of, you know, it's probably going to be a little bit more than 15 minutes. It'd probably be 20 to 30, as you stated, Daniel. But still, you know why, because it's bad weather. But, you know, in the good weather, it's still an appreciation. And then you have a schedule in your hand. And in my head, I'm like, I have a schedule. I know what's going on here. And life just happens, right? But yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just turning into prompts for
exactly.
a poetry board. Taking the bus.
You know what? I think that actually would be a good prompt because so much craziness happens on the bus. I've had so many bus experiences, but it's a huge difference from town to town. Like when I lived in Ottawa, the bus stops actually said how many minutes, like there was a digital clock of when the next bus was coming and you could track on the app, like where they were. Whereas I moved from a big city to Salmon Arm, BC, which is like literally like a little thing on the side of the lake where the salmon are. If you don't have a car, you can't get anywhere. And if you wanted to go to the movie theater, you can't because the transportation stops at 7 p.m. So you can't get home. It was such a big difference. And I can't drive because I'm disabled. So it's very limiting. I'm like, I need to live in a bigger city where I can not be dependent on people to drive me.
Well, I almost got stranded at work a week ago because the buses had to shut down at 9 because of the snow. And I was like, not petrified or anything, but I was like, oh, crap, how do I get home? But thankfully, one of my managers gave me a ride home. But that was the first time I actually was genuinely, almost stranded. Like, I didn't know how I was going to get home because it was – it was 9 o'clock and I was getting home from work. Not fun.
No. It's a challenge for sure. We are going to have time for more poems because we've been going super fast. So if anyone has another one that they want to throw on the topic board, please do. We are going to have time for more because I only have 2 more on my list, and we have lots of time. Add a poem to the board.
I was asking Tam if they read Under Satan's Foot yesterday.
Your poem from the Dark Show.
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking about?
Mm-hmm.
No, because we thought you might call in, I saved yours. So if you want to go ahead, post it on a Faviana's topic board for Part Sinner, Part Saint, you're more than welcome to do that and go ahead and give it a read.
Okay. Yeah, I'll do that. Let me go ahead and pull it up now.
Great,
I was thank like, you. Oh my God, I think I was supposed to call in for this. I was so sleepy, though. I was with my nieces all day, so this was not, I was out.
Okay.
I'm happy.
All right,
so while you guys look,
go ahead.
I'll read mine while you look for them. More
okay.
Ghosts by Faziana. I share my scars with the ghost of myself. She is a sapphire demon forged by pressure. We have a grudging peace. She keeps me safe in exchange for a home in my subconscious, sometimes creeping out of her room, haunting my present with echoes of her past. There are days my skin feels too tight, and I wonder if the right dagger would release more ghosts than I suspect lurk in me. There are sides of myself no one has met yet, not even me. End point. Pam, would you leave comments, please?
Oh, absolutely. I'd be happy to. Just so you know, though, you didn't get the link on the board, but I just put it up, and I'll start the comments so that everybody else, Confess and Robbie have time to look at it. I have to say that she is a sapphire demon forged by pressure is an enviable line. I like that you open it up as describing your ghost, that inner demon, as something that comes about because life has put you under pressure. I like also that we have a grudging peace. She keeps me safe in exchange for a home in my subconscious. Oftentimes what we see as our inner ghosts our inner demons, such as, you know, what might be considered like a lack of trust or, you know, a temper, you know, not putting up with people's bullshit, are all ways that we can often struggle with our personality in that way, but they're ways that we've learned to protect ourselves. We learn, and I'm just using these as examples. I don't know if these are what you meant, but for me, this is what I think of, is that the reason we learn not to trust people and to trust our instinct about, like, our first impressions of people, is because we've been hurt over and over again. And I like how the second part really goes into relating to the prompt with the whole idea that, you know, there are those parts of yourself that you haven't met yet. And oftentimes I think those parts that we haven't met yet are the ones we keep hidden from ourselves because we're psychologically just not quite strong enough yet to meet them. I thought this was a very strong brevity and very well done. And Robbie, your thoughts?
I just was making sure I wasn't on mute there. It made me think a little bit of the sort of the Jungian thing and kind of that tension you have when you're facing your ghost, you know, your inner self, but you want to do it and face it and not deny it, but you don't want to give it too much energy either. So that kind of precarious balance of, you know, of going that route but not going too far. And I heard that through the, where was that? When it talks about the uneasy, yeah, we have a grudging peace. And when it says she is a sapphire diamond forged by pressure, I thought, or sapphire demon forged by pressure. See, Freudian slip there. I thought of diamond because diamond, I know, right? Freud. Jung, anyways, I'm making myself laugh. I'm getting goofy. It's 2 a.m. But yeah, the diamonds are forged by pressure, and they're some of the most beautiful things, right? So that it made me think of, it mentioned the ruby, but that I also thought of the diamonds because they're very much the classic example of something in nature that's beautiful, that's forged by pressure, by a carbon being under pressure. So, and yeah, there's that tension towards the end of where there are days my skin feels too tight. And so it's kind of going to that feeling of, you know, is this a day where I can handle my own stuff or is it not? And today is one of those days where it feels like it's getting closer to not. And those are always the days that are the most challenging when our skin is metaphorically getting too tight.
I like that. The skin getting metaphorically too tight. Really great observations there and awesome comment. Thank you. And confess your thoughts on Faziana's poem.
Yeah, not only do I feel like this is great brevity, but it sounds more like a good confessional. I love good confessional poetry, obviously. nothing by that. But I think just like the last comment about, you know, the days my skin feels too tight, I was going to tell Faziana, like, well, you know, in my neck of the woods, when people are like, man, I'm tight right now, I mean, they're, like, pissed. So when I heard that, I was like, oh, is she mad? Or is her ghost inside mad about something? And it was kind of similar to what Pam was saying about how we, you know, we don't want to see that side of ourselves, or we are not yet prepared to kind of face those moments of darkness. And it just becomes, you know, it does become a ghost or even a shadow of you, because it's still lurking there because we haven't faced it, we haven't dealt with it. And the other thing about that that line in that second stanza, it kind of reflected the first stanza when she was already describing the pressure she was feeling, like a demon, like in like entered her or something. I don't know who pissed you off, but I didn't want to bother you that day, right? You know, and just the awareness of it, though. Because then some people, you know, we or people in general, including myself, we're aware of these different elements of our personalities, but we're not yet sometimes vulnerable enough to share that with other people. Like, hey, I'm not sure yet if my actual favorite color is burgundy. But for now, I really like it. And it's okay if I change my mind next week that now my favorite color is black. Hey, whatever. And that's just something simple that I'm trying to give an example to. But just knowing that it's okay to be something else. You can't be the same thing every day. That's not even like, it doesn't make sense to me for that. We're human. We have room to make mistakes. We have room to not be the same, because I just didn't think the universe, the God, or whomever created us that way. He created us to be complex human beings, to feel, to have emotion, to have thought, to critically think and to analyze, and then also to have inner thoughts. And I think the most beautiful thing about us as humans is that even when we're not speaking, we're still speaking, you know, unless you're like meditating. But I don't know. Even when I meditate, I still talk. I don't know. I don't know how to like not talk. So, so I just
great observations there, Confess.
You're so beautiful.
Wonderful comment.
Thank you, everyone. And Robbie, you're not really wrong to think about diamonds, because I did write it as demon, but I was also thinking about how diamonds are forged under pressure. So you're right to see that,
okay.
To accidentally say that, because I was playing on that.
That's cool.
It's always satisfying to see what the artist has intended, even if they haven't explicitly said it to you.
Yeah, so I have dissociative identity disorder, which basically is a post-traumatic stress thing where sometimes I have another personality. It's been under control for the last, like, 10 years or so. So fine, but my other personality that came of trauma, for some reason, is obsessed with the color blue, so that's why I did Sapphire. Because she wears blue and she has blue hair. And, like, I don't know, every time I wake up and she's been in charge, I'm, like, blue from head to toe. I'm just blue. So that is why she's the Sapphire. And then the second stanza is kind of wondering, like, is there anyone else lurking inside me? Or is it just her?
Mm.
So that's my crazy.
Well, you're not the only one. I think I have a time in here somewhere to talk about my bipolar syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Borderline personality. I have borderline personality disorder where, well, it usually comes out from triggers and from excessive binge drinking. So I guess the other side of me just really likes a good drink.
Yep. And that can definitely, like, activate the trouble that's already under your skin. So yeah, I don't know. I like writing about mental health stuff. It's therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
Robbie, would you read the one by our list for us that's on the board?
Okay. Okay. Arius, correct? Arius? As it always has been, soundless dreams populate the night sky. Translucent globes rattle with tumbling imagery and confused movements of the mind. Shuttered visions diffuse the moods of passion and fear, anger and sorrow. I sit them in hushed tones, a spectrum of unknown choices, of unheard arias. Oh, soft kisses, oh, sweet abandon, as I trembling unloosed her veils and disclosed her beauty. Oh, vanished forever is that dream of love, fled is that hour, and desperately I die, and never before have I loved so much. And that is from Tosca of Giamaccio Puccini. And then after it says, okay, there's like two, okay, it's split into two. So this is the second half. Oh, how can we return from the death of dreams? How feed on the word only to starve as time is devoured by rust? We carry the blight within us as we pass through the narrow gate. Iron has painted the stones a rusty brown with orange added at the edges of how many unseen flaws lie hidden in the emptiness within in the way of shadowed sight. How much love is lost. The love that found the way to save your life shall guide, be our guide on earth, our pilot on the waters, and make the wide world lovely to our eyes, until together we shall fade away beyond the sphere of earth as light clouds fade at sundown high above the sea.
Thank you for that read, Robbie, and thank you for the poem, Arlist. So I should have said, this is to the quote, I sometimes think I don't let myself know what I'm thinking about, what I'm really thinking about. That doesn't make much sense, but it makes sense to me. I have this idea that the reason we have dreams is we're thinking about things we don't know we're thinking about, and those things, well, they sneak out of us in our dreams. Maybe we're like tires with too much air in them. The air has to leak out. That's what dreams are. So that was a quote from the book, and then he also used those quotes from Tosca, which is cool, and related to it. So, again, I had to look up a word, so thank you, Arlist. I like doing that. The arias are a long-accompanied song for a solo voice, typically one in an opera or oratio. So this has a musical element to it. It's very interesting that it's called something that's musical, but the second line is soundless dreams. So the dreams don't have sounds, and yet there is a song, and it's unknown choices, unheard arias. It's those things that they don't, that you don't hear that are there, which makes sense with the quote that is about not letting yourself think what you really think. The other thing that I find interesting is that the main character, whose name is Aristotle, but he goes by Ari. So Arius has his name within it, which just seems like an extra fun little twist on it. I like the way that it talks about the color with stones, a rusty brown, with orange added at the edges. So that orange is, you know, not a natural thing. That's the oxidization. But it gives you an idea of the state of that iron. And I like that it's not just that it's rusted. It's painted a rusty brown. It's, I don't know, just the way that it's described is cool. So thank you for this, Arlist. And Pam, would you like to comment?
Oh, absolutely. I felt this was beautiful and had a kind of a spiritual and meditative feel to it. I like when poems introduce us to new words. I like that he put together his own words and the quotes. I sift them in hushed tones, a spectrum of unknown choices, of unheard arias. I thought was a particularly strong line, as well as the narrow gate, iron has painted the stones a rusty brown with orange at the edges, was wonderful imagery. And I like how this speaks on love lost and flaws hidden. So it's just really powerful and very well done.
Well said, Pam. And confess, I know you stepped away for a little bit. Did you get a chance to hear or read the poem by Arlist?
I did. And I was going to say that, sorry. Yes, I did.
No, go ahead.
What I was going to say was that I love the way that he included the poems and then kind of let us see what inspired him. You know, you don't see that a lot in poetry unless we have like a prompt. But then you have some contest or you know, someone asks you to write a poem, and sometimes there is no prompt. But here he had a prompt, but he also had what he called something else in him, and in his right. And for the imagery here and the metaphors and the personification here, it's just everything that a good poem, I feel a good poem needs to have, but yeah, sometimes they are. But they're still good. Anyway, so side note. But I like the part where he goes, oh, how can we return from death of dreams? How feed on the word only to starve? I love that. I love how even in like, if you're not trying to be technical or if you wanted to think it deeper, how, you know, sometimes we do have dreams of different things. And I don't know, see, my mind went to a starving artist, right? We, as writers, as people, like, I was just going to tell you, Asaja, when you were telling earlier about how you publish your books on Amazon. So I started to learn how to do the KDP book, where you can, like, self-publish and everything. It made me think of that, like how you're like, oh, you know, I made $10. And how people don't appreciate the arts, the creative arts anymore. So it had me think of that as well in that line. And it's just amazing how we can take from someone else's thoughts and create our own. I thought that was beautiful.
That was a beautiful comment. And Robbie, what did you think?
Well, it was appropriate that it mentioned how you mentioned with the that it was based on an aria and how it was musical, because when I was reading this, I literally wanted to get out. I have my guitar, my mountain dulcimer, and my violin in front of me right now, and I wanted to get out my guitar and start strumming like a medieval tune while I was reading. I enjoyed that it invoked that musical feeling inside me, and it very much has, even more so than the other poems, the feeling of an internal monologue. And as it gets towards the end, oh, how can we return from the death of dreams? How feed on the word only to starve? And it's getting towards that part of a dialogue of, you know, how can I get back to my highest self, or how can I get to a point where I'm the most realized where I can be? And that's, I don't know if that was the intent or not, but that's something I very much focus on. So that hooked me into the poem to experience the dialogue of the poem like that. So I've enjoyed being on, but I've got to go now. I do want to stay more, but I have work tomorrow, so I'm going to be.
No worries.
I am going to listen to the rest of the show outside. Well, I'm going to still be in chat a little bit, but I'm going to be listening to the show while I just lay back. And I appreciate you guys and I appreciate your show. It's nice to have. You got quality poetry here, and it's nice to have something. While, especially while I'm in quarantine, like, well, not me personally, but the we're in the lockdown again. So it's nice to have something to distract so that you don't go half crazy being locked up in your house.
I mean, I'm always half crazy, but thank you for calling in. And we'll talk to you again soon. I appreciate you calling.
You bet.
Confess, I put your poem on the board, if you're ready to read that.
Oh, nice. Okay, I'm going to go to it. All right, so this one is called Under Satan's Foot. This one is also for, I didn't realize that I had it for Into the Darkness as well. Oh, yeah, for the last show. And it was the prompt for those mass murderers. And so instead of me just choosing one, it's coming from a perspective from the victim and the killers. But I also mixed in all of the prompts. So it wasn't just one that I choose from. I just mixed them all for the gusto, you know? So here it is, Under Satan's Foot. Pestering my flaky thoughts. No crime awaits this fleeting time. He scratches my soul a little, making boxes inside feel confined. How dare this demon enrapture me? Mostly, I've escaped his wrath, yet he brings me back sometimes. Cruel, just cruel, never letting me out of his sight. Bipolar animal he is, too strong to even fight. This Jezebel inside leaves with another gentleman. Oh, I'm sorry. This Jezebel inside leaves with another gentleman inside, legs spread, dangling, flashy little insight. A sultry sinner amazes this adultery, pouncing stronger legs to pass out more seeds. Overtaking me, we both crash into the blockade ahead. The children silently whisper to their dad. He disappears. Then the car starts to purr. They cry and beg, but that's still not good enough. No pain enough for this thrill to kill. The devil's foot still gives me chills. His wrath never ends, and their hearts fled, leaving no one. Everyone is dead. And poem.
Ooh, that is an eerie one. Gives me chills. It's so funny how the devil's foot, which you think the devil would be like a hot thing you could associate with fire, makes you cold, but it does. Fear, you know, slows down your blood and makes you have that cold. I really liked How Dare This Demon Enrapture Me, because the idea of it being like a tempting thing, you're taken in. And even like just, because this is about the serial killer show, culture seems to be like so attracted to that. Like, I used to be so scared of watching anything that had death. And now, like, I feel like I've watched so many, like, criminal shows on Netflix that I'm becoming desensitized to it a little bit. I'm still a wuss, mm-hmm. but it is like, it's like, why am I captured by this? Why do I want to learn about and watch and be taken over by this? So even more so if you're like, imagine being the person and feeling like trapped by that temptation. The way that you describe this is really strong. There's a lot of verbs like pouncing, which just adds to it. Yeah, powerful stuff. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I have to agree with you. There's some really just powerful imagery in here in lines. This topic for the last night's dark or yesterday's dark show, and was a familial side or family annihilator killers who kill off their immediate family. And we provided people with either the opportunity to write about just the topic itself, or we provided an article that listed off the stories of up 10 well-known cases. And the first thing I have to say is I'm always impressed with anybody who does their research. And so, you know, that confess that you took time to read the articles and piece them together into a write that, you know, it's not necessarily brevity, but it's not particularly long. And you've captured a lot of the elements. Like when you say, how dare this demon enrapture me, there's this real sense of how oftentimes killers, especially it seems familicide killers, often find someone else to blame. There's, you know, and then the Jezebel inside leaves with another gentleman inside. That whole stanza there, I felt really focus on a couple of the stories where there was a cult-like feel to the family. I know there was one in particular where the dad was getting his daughters pregnant. And it was, and you're right, they're very dark, they're very disturbing stories. And what you've done is you've given us the mindset of those people who say, you know, to find a reason, you know, why it isn't their fault or why they had to do it. And it's interesting because, as the article itself said, they range from people that you can see as downright evil to people that you feel were trapped inside a sickness that nobody saw. And I really felt like I have to agree with Faziana, the devil's foot still gives me chills is a strong line because, you know, when you look at stories like that, it never quite escapes your mind of that humanity is capable of such horrific acts. So just a strong write and very well done.
Thank you.
It seems like a contest that would inspire a lot of cool things. Probably too scary for me sometimes.
Yeah,
my husband would
there
really like
pretty
it.
Dark rights, yes.
Now I'm really mad I missed this show. I was like, I can't believe I missed it. I was looking so much forward to that show, too, because I knew I saw a few of the poems. I'm like, oh, my God, it's going to be so good. But it's okay.
You still listen to it.
So I'm glad you got to read it tonight.
I know. I created me one of those blog things. But I did it for free, you know. I don't think anyone's going to listen to me. So, but just so I can follow you all and stuff. So, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Pam, it looks like we have just the right amount of time for you to read yours.
All right, sounds good. This is The Journey of the Miller's Stone by me. Wow, I don't even know why I started to say by. Habit. All right, here we go. I'm ready, philosopher's son, to take the journey of reasons beyond the roads of yesterday. What will I find when I seek? What will I seek when I find? There are crepes of ice upon the ground. The trees are an exorcism of frostbite. Waving branches in the Abba wind. There's blackness in the air, a fungus that swells upon the roots. I bite deep into a land of grain and water. The Miller's Stone is an amulet upon my tongue. I know these words of open sky, the prayers of red-winged blackbirds on the altar of the swaying reeds. End poem.
Oh, this is beautiful, Pam. I like there are crepes of ice upon the ground. So I'm thinking about like crepes as in like the food and how there's like those layers within them and having those layers of the ice is just, I don't know, a beautiful image in my mind. An exorcism of frostbite, that phrase right there, that could be like title of a book or something. You're talking about putting your poems into a book. Exorcism of Frostbite, that's one of them. That's such
Thank
a cool
you.
Phrase. an amulet upon my tongue. You create such fascinating, really unique images in your writing that I just love. Beautiful wording. And it's just you have your own wonderful style, and you can write in all different kinds of styles, but also I'll read it and I'll be like, this is a Pam, and that is a good thing. So I don't know. this is a Pam poem in a wonderful way.
Well,
I don't know if you saw, but I nominated you for Best Poem in Rap Free, or Best Poet, sorry.
Thank you.
It was a tie.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. What
do
you think,
Confess? I was just going to tell you that I told Pam that she's one of my favorites on one of my favorites on All Poetry. But yeah, like you said, everything you said is kind of what I was going to say as far as like the word choices, and definitely that line, the trees are an exorcism of frostbite, like just covered in frostbite, or like that's a better way of saying I'm covered in frostbite, you know, or the trees are covered in frostbite, or they're frozen, or the ice melted on the trees. Like she took it and went beyond what I would even say, you know, like you always, your wordplay always beyond what you would think the next line is going to be. It's like, oh my God, where does she even think of, like, where you just go to the dictionary and was like, okay, what's the better word to say other than this? Because that's what I'm starting to do, you know?
I do that occasionally, but not all the time.
But, like, I do that now because I'm like, I want to be a better writer. And I know I'm writing confessional poetry, but I want it to still have a deeper depth. I don't want it to be too all the time straightforward, because I know I like to write straightforward a lot, but I also want to have, I want to, you know new words. Just like a page is saying, and I always say it in our shows, I love seeing the new words. I love reading about the new poets that I haven't even thought to even, you know, read. So you always inspire something inside of me.
Absolutely. It's great fun to play with language and learn new words and learn new poets. I have to agree with you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, wonderful poetry. I'm really happy with all the poems that were submitted to both of the contests that we read tonight. And coming up soon, we have more shows, because Late Night Poets has something going on every day. My next show that I'm involved in is Double Helix on Thursday, which is with the Duke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey. And Dex has a contest about reflecting on your own poetry and how it feels when you get feedback on your poems where maybe people don't like your favorites. Maybe they pay attention to ones that you don't particularly like, and those are the ones that get popular, and about how it feels to be an artist with your work out there, maybe not seen the way that you see it. So if you want to reflect on the experience of being a poet, Dexter's Contest is a great opportunity for that. Babbler will be putting up a contest for next week's show of Part Sinner, Part Saint. I don't believe that's up yet, but she will be doing it soon. And thank you so much, Pam and Confess and Robbie, for calling in, and to all the poets who contributed tonight, and thank you to Fill My Eyes for giving me this time slot. Thank you.
Thank you. You guys have a good night.